Hello, everyone. Welcome to Upsize Your Leadership, the podcast about enhancing your effectiveness wherever you lead, whatever your role. It's always a pleasure to have you join us. Shortly after I founded Strategic Leadership Development International 25 years ago, I noticed a recurring pattern in companies that I served. We were, and still are, a comprehensive leadership development company. This means that we offer an array of services directly related to building superb leadership. One of our mottos is build leadership, build teams, build success. As a result, from the outset, I was engaged with many clients who turned to us for both coaching and team building, along with training and business consulting. Companies brought us in for a variety of reasons, but quite often they needed help with a serious malfunction in their business. Perhaps it was weak morale, or costly breakdowns in communication, or a cumbersome decision-making process. Whatever the problem, as I would begin to peel back the layers of the situation to get to the root causes, I kept discovering the same thing. Down underneath it all, often hidden well out of sight, were unrecognized, unaddressed, or unresolved issues of trust. I quickly learned that when we addressed the underlying trust issue and corrected it, the original problem that we were engaged to take care of seemed to cure itself. Communication opened up, collaboration increased, decisions became more timely, morale shot upward. This led me in 2005 to write a book entitled Leadership and the Power of Trust. The subtitle was Creating a High Trust, Peak Performance Organization. The themes of the book became the thrust of keynotes and training programs that I took to four continents over the next 10 years. In 2022, I expanded the book and issued a second edition, which C-Suite Network co-published with me. Within weeks, it became an Amazon bestseller. All of this is to say that for two decades now, I've been monitoring the strength of trust in our society, our institutions, and our corporate community. I wish I could say that the crisis of trust that I chronicled in 2005 is behind us, but it's not. If anything, it's more pronounced. So today, I want to look at the current state of trust in America with close attention to trust in the workplace, the trust that workers have in their leaders, and the trust that leaders have in their people. You will find it an insightful discussion, so don't go away. I'll be back in just a moment.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
25 years ago, when I began keynoting and blogging on trust, it was already dwindling in American society, and neither the business world nor the corporate world were exempt from the trend. Trust within these two spheres suffered a telling blow in the 1980s. At the beginning of the decade, when Ronald Reagan came to office, the U.S. was suffering a wholesale economic downturn. To escape the impact of the crippling recession, businesses needed to optimize efficiently. The early 1980s also marked the advent of affordable desktop computing. Personal computers were a promising tool for making workers more efficient. At the time, I was on the staff of Pepperdine University in Malibu. Founded by an entrepreneur, the man who began the first retail franchise business in the United States, Pepperdine had a long collaborative relationship with the business community. We had a listening ear attuned to how corporate America envisioned the future, and it was very clear that what boardrooms envisioned was a workplace empowered by personal computing. Therefore, early in the computer revolution, before IBM or Apple brought their first desktop computers to market, Pepperdine announced that it would incorporate computer literacy requirements into every degree plan. We were only the second university in the U.S. to make this move. Carnegie Mellon had been the first. Our belief was that if students left our campus conversant with personal computing, they would have a leg up on their peers in competing for top-paying jobs. As Dean of Students, I was responsible for all computing implementations on campus outside of the classroom. We were going to model the efficiencies that could be gained from capitalizing on this new technology. Thus, in the latter part of 1982, when I became president of a small liberal arts college in Oregon, I announced that we would follow Pepperdine's lead. We would become the third institution of higher education to require computer literacy as a condition for graduation. I say all of this to indicate how closely I was monitoring the early tie-in between computers and efficiency in corporate settings. But none of us anticipated the rapid strides in efficiency that computers would issue in. As the end of the decade drew nearer, companies that turned around in the wake of the recession were not doing so by increasing sales. They were using enhanced efficiencies to cut costs. They were looking everywhere for new efficiencies to capture, and they found it by wiping out much of middle management. The term at the time was flattening the organization. The rationale behind this practice was that with the communication capabilities of networked computer systems, there was no longer the need for so many middle managers. Their positions were therefore eliminated in wide swaths. Prior to that time, the ideal career path in the U.S. was to go to work for a large corporation, put in 30 to 40 years, and retire with a good pension. It was counsel that every college student heard at one time or another. Workers joined companies expecting to be there long-term and to reap the benefits of their loyalty. That sense of loyalty evaporated once flattening the organization became common practice. I had many friends who were put on the street with 17 or 18 years of service to a company whose retirement program did not vest until employees had completed 20 years with the company. But they happened to be in that vulnerable middle management tier that was eliminated in one fell swoop. Many of my friends were unable to find new employment for 2 years, some even longer. For the most part, no one was hiring middle managers. Many who had lost their job were not yet experienced enough for roles in the C-suite, and no companies would interview them for entry-level positions once recruiters looked at their resume. In corporate HR circles, it was presumed that someone with middle management credentials would not be content very long in a lower management role and would jump ship as soon as they could find a middle management position somewhere. Not only did this development adversely impact the employee, his or her family suffered through the extended period of uncertainty as they searched for a new position. Children, in particular, felt the powerlessness of this situation. A lasting lesson which they took away from this experience was never to trust the company. As they matured into adult careers, they carried this misgiving into the workplace. By the time I started my leadership development firm in 2001, distrust of higher management, especially among younger workers, was palatable. By then, another factor was stirring distrust in corporate leadership. A primary strategy by which companies grew was through mergers and acquisitions, not through increased sales. When mergers or acquisitions occurred, the result was duplicated positions, people from both companies doing exactly the same job. In the interest of cost savings, these redundancies obviously needed to be removed. A consulting industry soon materialized around mergers and acquisitions. These consultants were advising companies to remove the redundancies rapidly in the wake of combining two companies. Rapidly usually meant in 30 to 60 days. As a result, an employee in a redundant role never had time to prove his or her capabilities to the new ownership before a determination was made about the worker's continued employment. In most cases, the decision was little more than a spreadsheet exercise. By the time that I published the first edition of my book, I was routinely talking to employees who were withholding their trust in corporate ownership and management. Their sentiment was that when the next merger or acquisition took place, they could not count on higher management being loyal to them. They therefore reciprocated by minimizing the trust that they invested in the company. In the past 20 years, nothing has slowed the merger and acquisition train. If anything, it continues to accelerate. And the impact on trust? Let me offer statistics from a thorough investigation of that question in 2023. It revealed that only a minority of workers trust management, while 46% trust their immediate manager to do what is right. Only 32% trust senior leaders to do so. Interestingly, the research revealed an anomaly in the data about the degree to which remote workers trust senior management. It might be assumed that workers would generally put more trust in managers with whom they have regular in-person contact. But the research turned up a contrary pattern. Those who worked remotely or in hybrid situations were 22% more likely to trust senior leaders than those who work in person. Does this suggest that remote work somehow leads to higher trust in senior leadership? Perhaps. The logic behind it might be, if top management trusts me to work remotely, they are the kind of management that I can trust. The authors of the study, however, suggest an alternative possibility, namely, that corporate cultures where trust is already high may be more likely to allow remote work. Determining which theory best explains this data would make for interesting follow-on research. Also worthy of note, there seems to be a correlation between a worker's age and willingness to trust senior leaders. 45% of workers under 30 credit their managers with maintaining high trust and confidentiality. With employees over 40, however, that percentage drops to 31%. When I first saw these figures, my reaction was that 40 is roughly the dividing line between workers who as youngsters went through the family trauma resulting from flattening the organization and those who were born afterward. Younger people entered the workplace with no memory of what those years were like. Moreover, by the time that they entered the workplace, the merger and acquisition train had already built momentum. It was a general assumption that any company could become a candidate for takeover without much warning. These young workers, therefore, never expected the stability in employment that was taken for granted in the 1960s and 1970s. Whether this first reaction on my part has merit is somewhat academic, but what's not academic is that for everyone in leadership, putting a priority on building a high trust environment is imperative. In my book, Leadership and the Power of Trust, I pointed out that trust comes more from the subjective side of our being than from the cognitive side. When we question the wisdom of trusting an individual or a situation, we will frequently describe our distrust as a feeling. We say, "I just don't feel good about this." So, I devote a significant portion of the book to five things that people must feel in order to trust. Listeners who have followed this podcast for years have perhaps heard me touch on these five before. First, in order to trust, people must feel safe, not just physically safe, but psychologically and emotionally safe. Second, they must feel informed. As human beings, we are given to search for the why behind things that we experience. We want to know what caused it, what factors brought it about. In the absence of information, our fallback is to speculate about the cause or the intent behind it. Yet, by its very nature, speculation bruises trust. Almost invariably, speculation gravitates toward explanations which are adverse to our interests, our well-being, or our sense of security. The example that I use in my book is that you will never hear someone say, "You know, the executive team has been meeting behind closed doors for 4 hours every day this week. Wow, I bet something really good is about to happen." No, just the opposite occurs. In the absence of feeling informed, we speculate. The speculation raises the specter that something undesirable has occurred or is about to transpire. This foreboding then raises anxiety, and the anxiety undermines trust. This is why it's imperative for leaders to communicate, communicate, communicate. Third, people need to feel respected. None of us instinctively trusts people who treat us or our ideas with disrespect. In fact, I've never known of anyone responding to disrespect with deeper trust for the person who treated them or their comments with disdain. Fourth, people need to feel valued. They need to feel that leadership is pleased to have them on their team, that they have value in the eyes of leaders, not merely for what they do, but for them as a person. Years ago, researchers interviewed hundreds of workers, asking them what leadership behaviors most influenced them to trust their company. The second most common response was, "A manager who truly cares for me." And fifth, people need to feel understood. They are not asking for leadership to agree with everything that they say or suggest, but they want to walk away from conversations with their leaders feeling that their concerns were genuinely heard and that leadership made a sincere effort to understand both what they said and what motivated them to say it. So there you have it, an agenda for leaders setting out to gain trust from workers who, as the study showed, have a propensity today to distrust management. Make it a priority to help them feel safe, informed, respected, valued, and understood. Taking these steps does not automatically assure that they will trust you, but until they feel these five things, trust is unlikely to develop. If you would like a copy of Leadership and the Power of Trust, the second edition is available in both hardback and paperback, as well as an audiobook. You can purchase it at one of my websites, trustispower.com, where you will also find other resources on trust building. That's trustispower.com. A copy of today's program is available at upsizeyourleadership.com/episodes. Simply find the title of this program and click on the link to download scripts. And while you're there, click on the link to subscribe to this podcast, so that you can be alerted immediately whenever new episodes go live. I look forward to visiting with you once more next week. Until then, find some way every day to upsize your leadership.